Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada, it's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Gulbranson.
Welcome back. Hour number two of Silver and Black Today here on this Tuesday, the 19th. Of course, they're voting today for the Hall of Fame. Tom Flores up for the senior committee level induction into the Hall of Fame. And Q, I see this as a foregone conclusion. I've gotten a lot of folks in Raider Nation. Excuse me, I have to say, Q is back with us now for hour number two for a couple segments. We appreciate him being back. And Q, Tom Flores, you know, when you get to this level, when you're at senior committee level, very rarely, in fact, I have not been able to find a time when someone was named a finalist and not get in. I appreciate the companies out there doing campaigns for coach. I appreciate everybody still tweeting and retweeting and all that stuff. But it looks like finally, we won't find exactly today, but they are voting today, and it looks good for Coach Flores to finally get his due.
Yeah, and it's something I've been talking about and pounding the table for quite a while, and I understand Raider Nation's frustration because it's long overdue that he's not been put into the Hall of Fame, but he's in. You know, it's like I've been trying to tell everybody for the longest. I've had John McClain. I put it on the podcast. Hell, I did a whole podcast called the Hall of Fame Edition, you know, just letting everyone hear, not from me, but from hearing from John McClain, who's in that room, and he told me, and I said, hey, John, just to reassure Raider Nation that Flores is in, you know, he is in, right? And he said, hey, he's in. He's going to be a senior. He's on the senior committee. I'm a senior committee guy. We have voted him in. It's just a formality now what they're doing. Right. So I know Raider Nation doesn't really trust that because I feel like they've been burned multiple times. I had a dude tweeting at me, Phil Jr. He was tweeting at me multiple times, and I was like, man, I can't tell you. There's nothing else I could tell you except for that he's in. And then he's like sending me tweets of, you know, different people that are putting a push on it by way of Twitter, like, you know, trying to get everyone to make sure they go vote, fans and like Amy Trask and everyone else in the media and everything. And I'm like, look, that's all well and good and everything. There's nothing else I could tell you except for the fact that he's in, and that comes from the horse's mouth. I mean, the dude who's actually in the room, you know, helping with voting, the votes, right, already knows and has been doing it for many, many years. So Raider Nation, you know, there's not too many things I guarantee in life, but I guarantee that Tom Flores is in because the guy that sits there and actually is part of it has already confirmed that to me.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, and that's what I've been trying to explain, and I've been DMing people, and I said, look, it's never happened before where they've named a finalist and that person's not voted in. It's not like the standard modern era players who are up and you have so many people and do they get enough votes. When you get to this level and you have him and, of course, Drew Pearson both going in, they're in. And so, you know, I want to reassure Raider Nation of that. And like you said, it's a formality. And you're right. You know, Raider Nation's been burned before with guys and still is with people like Cliff Branch and others. And so I get it. I understand why you're tentative, but he's going to get his due. They see the commercials for the beer commercials and all that stuff, and they think like it's not a foregone conclusion. And that was just smart marketing. So it's all good, and he's getting the credit he deserves. And plus, the Coors ad, which is what it's for, was great just because they're honoring him too. They're giving him his due. They're giving him some more attention ahead of the vote during the football season, which is a good thing because Coach Flores deserves it. He deserves more credit as being a pioneer in the league as both a player and a coach. And it's good to finally see that happen. Now, we talk about Tom Flores, Q, and the subject around diversity hiring. We talked to Rod Graves last week from the Fritz Pollard Association or Alliance, excuse me. And there continues to be a lot of animosity out there. I don't know if you read Jason Reed's piece today up on The Undefeated. Jason Reed, you know, great reporter, longtime NFL coverage. And he kind of wrote a scathing piece basically decrying the owner, saying, look, the NFL, the Fritz Pollard Alliance is trying to do things to do this. But once again, in essence, his ending of his column said the NFL owners are sending a clear message and they couldn't make their feelings more clear. All that's needed now is to hang a sign that says black men need not apply. So we found out today Terry Fontenot, African-American, was hired as the Falcons' first African-American GM, which is great news. But you still have this situation now with Eric Bieniemy has become the lightning rod for this conversation. Yeah. And my question is, look, I should have asked this question to Rod Graves, and when we get him back on, I will, because I'm trying to as someone who's not African American, especially, you know, for me, I look at it from a different perspective, I think. And I look at it and I say, okay, if there's a problem in the NFL, they're trying to address it. Whether or not owners are addressing it enough, I don't know. But my question, I guess, is, and I'm just going to put this out there, I'd love to hear your responses. When do we get a place where people feel it's equitable, right? And that to me is the question I have is is there five coaches? Is there 70% of the coaches? Because the NFL is 70% African American. And so
right.
I'm trying to get to understand kind of what it is. Cause to me, it's not about Eric Bieniemy. Eric Bieniemy is being used as the guy, as the example. And I understand that that's helpful. But at the same time, I'm trying to understand the goals here. And I understood what Rod Graves told us, Q, was, hey, he wants opportunities that they're able to sit at the table, interview for these jobs. And he didn't go as far as say they have to be hired. He didn't say that. And so right. I'm wondering why those of us in the media are jumping to that. And I'm just trying to make sense of it. And I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, it's not simple. I mean, it's not going to be a simple solution. It's not going to be something that's going to happen overnight. But I think what it is, and this is where I come from, and I know that, you know, the Rooney Rule is set up with good intentions, and everything that's going on with hiring a GM or a front office person and getting some compensation is all set up in good intentions. But like Rod Graves told us, it's about buy-in. It's about buy-in from the owners, you know. And as an African-American, this is what I've always pounded the table for myself. And I can't speak for a whole race of people. I can only speak for myself. I've only wanted a fair shake. And what I mean by that is just give me an opportunity. Just put me on the – don't look at me and say, well – He's not bad for a black guy. Just say, hey, he's okay or he's not okay. I just want to be judged by my ability. I don't want to be judged by what I look like. And I can give you a perfect example of this. The radio station that I'm at currently, one of the biggest things in radio is doing live read commercials. Well, there's a guy who's our salesman, who's our number one salesman, who will not sell me as a live read commercial. And when he does, it's for like a used car dealership, or it's for someplace with, that sells big rims, or has a stereo shop or something like that.
Way.
And I tell him, seriously.
Oh my God.
Believe me, I live this every day,
And
so I tell him all the time, like, hey man, I just bought a 2020 Cadillac Escalade, and I know that we're going to be doing, live reads with the Cadillac dealership here in town. I would be a really good person to be able to speak on Cadillacs because, well, that's all I drive. And he says, yeah, I'll think about that. And then it comes back to, oh, well, hey, maybe you can do this used car dealership, because I think more people that listen to you would adapt to that.
Oh.
And that's and he says that with a straight face, like there's nothing wrong with that. Oh. And I'm not telling that story to tell anyone to like feel sorry for me, because I get it. I know I know what kind of playing field I'm playing at. Hell, I'm in Central Texas. I mean, let me tell you, it's not Las Vegas. You know what I mean? It's not California. Mm-hmm. And it was a wake up call when I got here. California, everyone just kind of looks at each other like whatever. You know what I mean? Like, we were just, it was what it was. And then I came to Texas and it's a different ball game. Everybody's a little bit behind in times. And so, I mean, you know, that's something I've had to adapt to, but I'm smart enough to understand what's going on, you know? And so it's bizarre, because you would think like, hey man, just the guy's really good at what he does. He has a lot of people that listen to him, a lot of people that follow him and do whatever. And if he's out somewhere, he's going to show up somewhere. But that's not the case. It's just, you're not qualified to do this because, and it's no more than just the color of my skin, which is ridiculous. So that's what I've always said when it comes to like the Rooney Rule. I've always been offended by that. And people are like, well, why would you get offended? Like, they're trying to help you out. I don't want a handout. Mm-hmm. All I want you to do is judge me and base me off of what I do, my work ethic, what I bring to the table, if I'm good at my job. And yesterday being MLK Day, that was one of the things he said in his speech. One day my kids will be judged by their character, not what they look like.
Right.
That's all I've ever cared about. Like, hey, judge me by my actions. Don't judge me by what I look like. That's been the biggest issue. So a long story to get back to talking about, diversity in the NFL. I think that's all that everyone wants is a chance for Eric Bieniemy to sit at the table and have an interview and feel like he's interviewing because they really are considering him for the job, not just because they're trying to satisfy a rule. And I say Eric Bieniemy, but, I mean, you can insert anyone. Mike Singletary.
Yeah,
Leslie Frazier. I mean, Jim Caldwell interview. Did anyone think Jim Caldwell was about to get another job?
No.
But he's just a Rooney Rule interview. And I'll tell you, I know that there's no right way or wrong way to get hired, and sometimes you can get hired based off of whatever and then end up being the best guy. I get it, but I'll be damned if I'm just the guy who goes to the table and is like, oh, we're going to interview Q because we have to. He's a black guy. Yeah. No, interview me because I'm good at what I do and you respect my work ethic and you respect the guy that I am. And I'll tell you right now, I won't be the first guy hired ever, but I will be the guy that works my tail off and work harder probably than anyone else in the building. And I might not be the most talented dude, but I guarantee you that I can work my tail off and give you everything I got. And if that's not good enough, then you don't need to interview me and you don't need to hire me. Simple as that.
Yeah, and I appreciate the perspective, Q, because for those of us that aren't African American, it gives us insight to understand some of the mentality there and the thought process. And I agree with you. You want to be rewarded for your talent and your abilities, right?
Right.
And in this case, like I'm not sure what to think though, because like you said, the way you laid it out was perfect. So if Eric Bieniemy gets a bunch of interviews and he doesn't get the jobs, then is that in itself, and I wouldn't call it racism, but is that prejudice? Is that not giving him a fair shake? I don't know. Like, I don't know what, and that's my ask is, I don't know what these people who are out there beating the drum that this is a broken process, for example, what it is they want. If Eric Bieniemy interviews for 7 jobs and gets none of them, they look at that as a failure. If he were to interview for 1 job and not get it, it's a failure. If he interviews for 2 jobs, you know, and then what about all the other coaches we haven't heard about that are interviewing for coordinator positions that didn't get jobs? And so I'm just wondering, and I understand, again, like we talk about with Rod, it's the head coach, so it's very visible and you get that. And so I'm just wondering, because I see, to me, what I've seen some very respected journalists of color out there talking about it and saying, look, this is a travesty. All these people are being hired. And there are cases, like, for example, I'll use in LA with Brandon Staley. Brandon Staley has way less experience than Eric Bieniemy. There's no question. Yep. And so, like, I look at that situation and I go, well, how the hell does he get that job? But Eric Bieniemy doesn't, right? So I get that piece of it. But then there are other jobs that went to people who are more experienced and have more experience running programs and things like that. And there's examples of not. So I'm just, for me, as someone who's just trying to, I think, make sense of it all and understand what the problem is so I can be part of the solution, I guess, is I don't always understand what we're going to look at one day and say there's progress. Because if Eric Bieniemy gets hired, is that really progress? Because one black coach got a big job, but what about the rest of the positions? If no one else got those jobs, is that still a success? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, the thing about it is, and I think that Rod Graves might have touched on this as well, you know, guys hire people that they're comfortable with. We know that. I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, coaches do it, you know, staff members, they do it, owners, they do it. And until there's other people in ownership that are comfortable with Eric Bieniemy, that are comfortable with Chris Richard, that are comfortable with so on and so forth, insert any name, you know, you're not going to see it. You're going to see guys that, you know, these guys, like I said, are comfortable with. And so that's part of the process of getting to the table. Now, if Eric Bieniemy interviews 7 times and he doesn't get interviewed, I mean, he doesn't get hired, maybe he's not a great interview. Maybe there's just, you know, some things that they see that they don't, you know, they don't like, they're not a big fans of. But I mean, you know, I heard someone say, well, and I think, matter of fact, I think Vinny Bonsignor was talking about it on Inside the Huddle. I think they were kind of having a good conversation and said, well, some people think that Andy Reid, you know, if you're under the Andy Reid tree, that maybe you're just really a product of Andy Reid and you're not that good. But, you know, Matt Nagy and Doug Peterson got hired and they were underneath the Andy Reid tree. Yep. So, I mean, I think that may play a factor, but not the whole part. But again, going back to what Graves said, it's all about buy-in. You know, if you can sit down, and this is what I think that a person like myself is really good at, is building relationships with just about anyone. And I never approach anyone like, hey, I'm going to be cool with that black guy or I'm going to be cool with this white guy. I just say, hey, I'm going to you know, try to build a relationship with this dude. And that's what it's all about, is building relationships. If you can have a great relationship with someone who's in a power, in a position of power that could put you in a better position, that's when you're going to get an opportunity to get hired. And so it's unfortunately, that's what the name of the game is. It's about building relationships. It comes down in every walk of life. I mean, I've said this so many times, I've never received a radio job that I've ever applied for. And I've applied for plenty. I've just never gotten them. But I have gotten a bunch of radio jobs that people knew me and knew what I was about and was like, hey, Q, you want to take this job? And gave me a job. You know what I mean? So yeah. It's like, it always comes down to relationships.
Yeah, it does. And I think, you know, you look at the situation too, and I really was struck by Jason Reed's column, because he talks a lot about the things that you mentioned, like interviewing, and he kind of dismisses that and says, well, no, because if you look at white assistants, they seem to get a better chance, even though they have, he basically calls it a double standard. He says, look, there's other guys who have quote unquote not interviewed well, but they somehow get jobs. And so for
me, do we know that though?
I don't know that
for a fact. Like, I'm not correct in the room and say this guy interviewed bad. So I'm not willing to go out on that ledge and say, well, this guy interviewed bad and he got the job, or this guy interviewed really good and got the job. And I'm not willing to say that Eric Bieniemy's interviewing bad, because again, I don't know any of that. I'm just thinking of what possibly could be going on outside of, you know, him not looking like everyone else.
Yeah. And I think too, that one thing that because Hondo and I briefly discussed it yesterday too, a little bit. And one of the things that I discussed was, look, if Eric Bieniemy, maybe, I don't know for sure, and maybe it would leak out because somebody would have leaked it, and so maybe I'm completely off base here, but Eric Bieniemy might have also interviewed for jobs. He might have had an interest and they called him back for a second interview, and he said, you know, I'm okay. No thanks. Because he went down, he had the meetings, and maybe he, now I'm not trying to dismiss the issue. I'm just saying, right, we don't know what happens in that room. And by the way, he might, for him, he's not going to come out and say, yeah, you know, I talked to Detroit. I went up and met with him and I just wasn't comfortable with what they were going to do there, because you don't burn bridges in the NFL. It's a small community. And right, so you're, well, not going to, yeah, make a team look bad by saying, yeah, even though I interviewed for the job there, I didn't want their job. Now, I'm not saying that happened. Like you said, on the other side of it, I don't know what happened, but I do know that I think the issue here, at least for me, and again, this is white guy sitting in Las Vegas, but I look at it and say, I think this is, to me, less, it goes back to what you said about relationships. To me, it's less of an issue, I think, of overtly not considering black candidates, and it's much more about nepotism. And I don't mean nepotism from a blood relative, but to your point, nepotism about relationships and people that you coached with and people that you've worked with or whatever it may be. And you would think after this time that there would be more black coaches, just by the fact that there's so many involved in the sport and there's so many involved in coaching. And I'm not saying, again, that we don't need to look at it and figure out how to do better. To me, though, I look at the NBA, right? Because the NBA is kind of held up as an example. And the NBA has 8 black coaches, right? Now, of course, that's more than the quote-unquote 3, if you consider, which some do, which I don't necessarily, Ron Rivera as Afro-Latino. And so you look at that and you say, okay, so the NFL, yeah, the NFL's got 2 less teams. And so then, are we just getting into a numbers game? And is the numbers game really the solution, I guess? So to me, I just keep going back and forth in my head, man. And I want, like I said, I always want to be part of the solution. And I love the NFL, and I want people to be judged, like you said, like MLK said, about the content of their character, not the color of their skin. I'm just not sure how we're going to get there. And I don't know that everybody out there who writes about the NFL, talks about the NFL, will ever be happy with whatever comes up.
Right. I mean, it's like I said, it's about buy-in from the ownership. As times progress and things change and ownership changes hands, things will change as well. You know what I mean? Like, again, it's kind of like you can't make Jerry Jones go out and do something he doesn't want to do. Right. I mean, I'm just using his firm example because he's one of the highest well-known judge or owners in the league, and he's very set in his ways. And he might not be comfortable with hiring Eric Bieniemy as his head coach, so he'd rather go get a retread like Mike McCarthy. And that's, I mean, if you're the owner of the team, you can't, there's not really anything you can say. I can't get mad at him for being able to say, I'm going to hire who I'm comfortable with. You know, so as ownership starts to change hands and times start changing and you start to get some new blood in there, and I'm not saying, hey, just kill off all the owners. That's definitely not what I'm saying. But I mean, that's just what it's going to take is it's going to take ownership changing hands and new blood in there and new concepts and new thoughts. And that goes back to, I mean, us being on Raider Nation Radio is what goes back to why Al Davis was so great, because he never, ever gave a damn what you looked like.
Right.
He didn't really care about relationships either. He just recognized really good talent and wanted to get that guy in there and wanted to get the best out of that guy or that woman and put them in that position. And that's, I mean, he was way ahead of his time. And that's why, I mean, just being a Raider fan as I am, I mean, first and foremost, before I'm anything else, that's what the beauty of it is. It's like, that's the guy that everyone wants, but there's just not, everyone's not an Al Davis. Everyone's not part of the Davis family. You know, he's the guy that gave you an opportunity and said, hey, the playing field is equal for everybody. I just want winners. I just want guys that are talented. And he gave you that opportunity. And I say guys, but I mean men and women, because he did that with Amy Trask as well. So, I mean, everyone, people can poo-poo on Al all they want, but Al was way ahead of the times. And if there was more Al Davises, we wouldn't be having these conversations that we're having right now.
Agreed. And you know, I actually draw some correlations to Q to back up the point you're making in closing here is to the music industry, right? Because if you go back to the history, go back to rock and roll and even the blues in the 30s through the 50s when white kids started listening to black music, whether it was from white artists like Elvis Presley or Chuck Berry, of course. What happened was black artists were getting ripped off, right? And it never changed. And it still happens today, by the way. And by the way, people of the same race rip each other off too all the time. But my point is they got to a point where you had ownership, you had promotion that was black controlled in the music industry, right? And so that started to change things. And I agree with you. It starts at the ownership level, and you have to see that. You have to see that. And that's not to say that black owners wouldn't hire white or Latino or gay or women executives. It's just to say that there's a different perspective. You create opportunity. And to me, I think that's one of the issues that the NFL should do is figure out how they start to look at a path and find ownership in the NFL. Because I think then you bring somebody to the table who has influence. You bring somebody to the table who makes the other owners, because it's a small club, folks, to think about things from their perspective and be a voice at that table. Even if it's one voice, to me, that would be much more powerful. So I think we're going to have this discussion. I think there are people who want to be on fringes of both sides. There's people who don't think there's any problem. And then there's people who think that, you know, everything is racially motivated. And I think we have to find ways and solutions to this. And the only way we do that is to continue to talk about it, continue to explore it, and find real ways to do it and not just complain about it. So hopefully we can all be part of that solution. All right. Well, good discussion, man. I appreciate that very much. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get to the Q-tip and some NFL news. And we'll ask Q about, hey, what's going on with Deshaun Watson in Houston since he's down in Texas. This is Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio.
The autumn wind is a raider, and when it blows, it comes from the Las Vegas desert. Back to Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Welcome back, Silver and Black Today, Raider Nation Radio, powered as always by our good friend Sam and Ash, 702-820-1234. Scott Gilbranson and Q Myers back with you. The Q-tip is coming up in just a few minutes. Q, some interesting NFL news. We're starting to see a little bit of roster moves, not a ton really till after the Super Bowl, but surprising but not surprising, the Baltimore Ravens have released running back Mark Ingram. Remember last year, him and Lamar Jackson were like the Bobbsey twins. They were doing media, talking about how much they love each other, talking about how great this team was. And Mark Ingram was a healthy scratch the last four games of the season, and suddenly he's out of Baltimore.
Yeah, I mean, 31 years old, you know, I'm not going to say it's a huge surprise, especially after they went and drafted J.K. Dobbins out of Ohio State, in the draft in 2020. But still, I think at 31, and as long as he's healthy, I think he could be a nice addition to a team. I mean, this dude played in 11 games for Baltimore and only had 299 yards rushing. I mean, crazy. You mentioned the healthy scratches that he was. He only had 72 carries in 2020. So he doesn't have a lot of tread on his tires as far as like the last couple seasons, combined. And where he's at age 31. So I think that's really, really interesting, man. That's a really, really interesting, release by the Ravens. It saves them about $5 million. I do respect it, though. They give it to him early, and that gives him an opportunity to become an early free agent and be able to find another team. He can't sign with another team until after the Super Bowl, but so what? I mean, he's still out there. People know he's available, and I'll give him a shot on getting a job, a little bit earlier. And I'm not that guy. I hate, being that guy. Oh my God, there's a name out there that's available. Go sign him, Raiders. I mean, I see Raider Nation do it all the time. But I will say, with that being said, at 31 years old, as a compliment to Josh Jacobs, two Alabama guys, I think they'd be good on the field, and I think they'd be great in the meeting rooms for each other as well. I think that would be a heck of a pickup if the Raiders could get him at the right price.
Yeah, and it seems like he lost, like last year he had such a nice year, and then this year he just didn't have that explosiveness. I don't know if he was hurt or what the situation was, but he seems to have lost a step. Now, that could just be a temporary thing. You don't know what happened. Clearly, Baltimore lost faith in him as the lead runner there, and like you said, with Dobbins there. So to me, yeah, if it's a guy you bring in on a pretty low contract, as kind of a proven contract with lots of incentives that are reachable for him as a backup to Josh Jacobs, why not? I mean, and you're right. I'm not, you know, I always make fun, frankly, of fans of all teams, not just Raider Nation, of every time a name hits the waiver wire, oh, what should we go get him?
Right.
But I think in this case, as we've been talking about all year, Q, and we saw Devontae Booker do good things in certain spots, but he's not the same power runner that Mark Ingram is, and they would complement each other well. So we'll see what happens, but it's just so shocking that after 1 year, it shows you the NFL, man, it's a business, and when things sometimes start to separate and things go different direction, they go very quickly, and don't be surprised if you see some of these with the Raiders too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, again, and the salary cap, we know it's going down, you know, so there's going to be teams going to make tough decisions, and Baltimore's getting out in front of it, and the Raiders are going to be doing that soon, too. And, you know, I'm sure that they're going through it right now. They're going through the rosters in those offices right there in Henderson, talking about, is this guy someone that we're moving forward with? Is this a guy we could release and then bring back at a lower deal? I mean, that's also something that you're going to see. So there's going to be a lot of moving and shaking going on this offseason, and so it's going to be very, very intriguing. I feel like there's always going to be, you know, some kind of storyline going on in throughout the league, just because there's going to be a lot of roster shifting this offseason with the salary cap going down.
Also, I wanted to get an update from you since you're down there and you talk to Tom McClain all the time down in Houston, who covers the Texans. The Deshaun Watson stuff, look, that organization has been problematic for a long time. I've always said that there's no reason for them to trade him. I wouldn't trade him no matter, unless you came to me with a king's ransom that was ridiculous. What's the latest down there? Is there any chance that they actually might move Deshaun Watson?
You know, I don't think so. I stick, you know, with John McClain. I ride with John McClain. What he tells me is what I roll with. And he said that for 2 weeks now in a row that, no, Deshaun Watson's not being traded. No way, no how he's being traded. But I will say, with that being said, when there is so much smoke like there is right now about everything going on with Watson, and people over the weekend coming out and saying he's played his last snap with the Texans, and that's how they're feeling, and they're starting to, you know, field calls about potential trades, you know, you start to think like, man, you know, you never know. You know, there could be someone who decides that they're going to give a king's ransom up, and the Texans say, you know what, this just isn't worth it. I'll tell you one thing, man. The fans in Houston, you got to give them a lot of credit, man. They organized a rally, yes, like almost a march outside of NRG Stadium yesterday. And Deshaun Watson actually had to take to Twitter and was like, hey, man, because of COVID, why don't you guys just go home? Don't, you know, I appreciate you guys, but don't do that. Let's all be safe and everything. But there was like 150, almost 200 people out there in front of NRG Stadium talking about I stand with Deshaun and all this. And I mean, that organization is a mess right now. It really is. Jack Easterby, he gets a lot of hell from everybody. He's only been in the organization a couple years, so it's funny that he's the one who catches all of it. There's a lot of problems with the ownership going back even a few years ago when everything was going on with kneeling, and the ownership said, you know, you can't let the inmates run the asylum, and yeah, some players didn't like that, including Dwayne Brown, who's now currently with the Seahawks, and he basically vowed then he wasn't going to play anymore for the Texans. So there's a lot of chinks in the armor, man. You know, there's a lot of issues going on there in Houston, and so it might get to a breaking point. Every single week when I talk to John, I say, hey, you know, not to beat a dead horse, but I just got to ask for an update. Just, hey, where are we at right now? Where are we at right now? And I mean, who knows, at some point 5-6 weeks down the line, maybe he says, well, Q, you know, I'm hearing something else differently now. But as of right now, everything is status quo. Deshaun Watson is going to be a Texan, but, you know, continue to hold on and watch this story, because it could change quick, fast, and in a hurry.
Yeah, Chris Mortensen in ESPN has reported this week that a source close to the Dolphins say that they remain a prominent, quote, accepting landing spot because the quarterback likes the culture he's observed under Brian Flores, which I would agree is a great young coach.
Yeah.
And there's no state income tax in Florida. Which then, of course, when Raider fans read that, Q, guess what they say? They say, well, Nevada
no
doesn't have
tax. Vegas. Yeah, exactly.
Although
exactly.
I think the Dolphins, you know, when you have a Tua perhaps that you could offer in return, along with a little more draft capital than I think the Raiders have, it's going to be fascinating. I again, you know, I'm a Deshaun Watson fan, and it's right. tough when you're in a situation where they hire a GM. He wanted some say there, at least to be consulted on it, which he was not. And there it becomes, and I'm sure you've talked to with John a bunch of times, is, you know, Cal McNair is Cal McNair. And if he doesn't like working for Cal McNair, there's nothing, you can't fire the owner. So right. Unless he does something stupid like the guy in Carolina did. But nonetheless, you can't fire the owner. So if that's the case, then maybe it is an tenable situation and maybe they look at doing something. It's just I just can't imagine, Q, what a team, what they would ask for Deshaun Watson. I mean,
well, at least three first round picks,
yeah.
and possibly a player in return. And you mentioned Tua, and I've heard that as well. And you know, Deshaun has that no trade clause, so even if the Raiders said, "Hey, we'll go all in and trade for him," if he don't want to go there, he could just say, "No, I'm not going."
Exactly.
He has a no trade clause, so he could veto any kind of team that he wants to go to. I've heard other people say, "Well, the Jets should go ahead and give him a bunch of picks; they have it, or the Jaguars." What if he don't want to go to Jacksonville? What if he don't want to go to New York and be with the Jets? Exactly. Go from one bad situation to another. He would just decline that. So, Raider Nation has to be careful when they think about that as well. But when it goes back to Miami and Tua, like, yeah, I can see him saying, yeah, that's a cool situation. I'm sure he'd love to work for Coach Brian Flores. Mm-hmm. But you tell me Houston wants Tua in return? What has Tua shown? No disrespect, but what has he shown that makes you think that, oh, he's going to be the franchise quarterback, no doubt about it? Hell, he had to get pulled out of games and let Ryan Fitzpatrick go close out games like a baseball player. Like, there's, you know, and this ain't no baseball where you got a starter and a closer. This is the National Football League. Your quarterback is your closer.
Yeah, no, that's why if they were somehow to move him, it wouldn't shock me if it was for a team that's got a defensive player. But the problem is when you have those guys like, you know, edge rushers who are top of the league, like you don't want to trade those guys either, because then you create, you might solve your quarterback problem, but then you create a problem on the defense. So it's a really weird situation. I just don't see him moving right now, but we'll see. And I'm with you. I'll ride with John McClain anytime, because the guy's a freaking right. Hall of Famer and he's awesome.
Exactly.
So we'll see what's going on. All right. It's that time of the day. We turn over the microphone. It's time for the Q-tip.
I can't hear you, Peach.
It's time to listen up, Raider Nation.
Can't hear you, Peach.
Clear out those ears and get ready for the Q-tip. Your boy Q's daily take on what you need to hear.
That very precision seems to drive Q-tip fans right over the edge.
Like it or not.
All right, now this is going to be one today that I'm sure some in Raider Nation won't like, and, you know, that's okay. Sometimes we take the good with the bad. But I've just been seeing a lot more momentum. I had a lot of people hit me up over the weekend when they actually saw this go down during the divisional games and the Kansas City Chiefs game and the Browns game in particular, when there was the famous, you know, dive at the goal line by I think it was, who was that, who did it with the Browns. Anyway, he gets hit by the Chiefs safety and fumbles the ball. Raider Nation has seen Derek Carr do that many times, you know, dive at the goal line, fumble the ball, goes into the end zone and goes out of bounds. It's a touchback. One, I'll say it's a terrible rule. I will say that. Terrible rule. I hate it. If you fumble the ball out of bounds at the 3-yard line, it just goes out of bounds at the 3-yard line. You get the ball. You fumble it out of bounds in the end zone and then it goes out. All of a sudden, it's a turnover. You know, I don't like the rule. I've always thought it was dumb, but whatever. It is what it is. But I saw so many people in Raider Nation just clamoring, talking about, but what about the helmet-to-helmet hit? That should have been a penalty. I honestly, as a guy who watches the games and really tried to study it as much as possible, I didn't even notice the helmet-to-helmet hit until Gene Index Card Sterator decided he wanted to say something, during halftime. And that's when all the broadcasters were like, oh, yeah, that was a helmet-to-helmet. I'm not going to lie to anyone. Some people will tell me, oh, no, that's the first thing I saw. Okay, fine. First thing you saw. First thing I saw was a fumble. First thing I saw was the ball rolling out of bounds and realized it was going to be a touchback immediately and thought, oh no, that's terrible. Hate that rule. That's the first thing I thought of him. So maybe I'm just not paying attention like others, but for people to still be clamoring, you know, Tuesday, Monday, Tuesday, all about, oh my God, this is the play that cost the Browns the game. And it's a lot of Raider fans, you know, and I get it. You hate the Chiefs. I get it. But believe me, that one play is not the only reason why the Browns lost the game. And again, I don't know how many times we've seen helmet-to-helmet hits. Now, you want to complain about a helmet-to-helmet hit, how about the one Hunter Renfro took?
Oh, man.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I saw more Raider Nation complaining about the helmet-to-helmet hit that was given by the Chiefs safety on a Browns wide receiver than I did hear them complaining about the hit on Hunter Renfro, which was legit and knocked him out of the game and should have been called a penalty that wasn't. That's one that was obvious and clear and right in my face, and I was very upset about, as I'm sure Hunter was as well. But if you're not going to get mad about that, why are you going to get mad at one that happened with the Chiefs? Because it was the Chiefs and you really wanted them to lose? I get it. But come on, man.
Well, Q, the other thing, too, was, and clearly it was helmet-to-helmet contact, okay? And I didn't see it on the first play either. So if somebody did, then they had really good vision. But nonetheless, to me, though, it's also the referee has the ability on the field to, at least from a judgment call perspective, decide whether or not there was intent. Right?
Right.
And I don't know. I watched the play a million times like everybody. And of course, yeah, the broadcaster, oh yeah, that was helmet to helmet. And he was leading with his head. Well, he was, but he was diving. Like, you can't dive, even if you're trying to hit somebody with your shoulder, you can't dive and not have your head first. Like, it's not physically possible. And so I agree with you. And look, there's always rule interpretation. There's always going to be controversy. It's part of being a fan too and all that. But you're right. There was a couple examples against the Raiders this year. And of course, the latest was the Hunter Renfro one, which you talked about, which to me, I think was clear, not because we cover the Raiders, but it was clear intent that he led with his head. I mean, it was not even a close, and it created such a jarring play that it knocked Hunter out when he was in the concussion protocol. So I get that piece of it. But yeah, I think too that with Raider Nation, and God bless them, I think that without their team in the playoffs, they find a lot of things to not be happy about.
Man, for real. I mean, and like I said, I get it, but and this is why when the games are on, I try to not be on social media. I try to stay away from that. I just like to watch the games, but everyone hits me up and says something, and I appreciate them reaching out. I'm glad that they appreciate my opinion on things, but man, I was just like, okay, I get it. But if it had been another team, or if that had been the Raiders that had done that and caused that, nobody would have been saying, oh man, that was Jonathan Abram, terrible penalty, or you know what I mean, or that should have been a penalty on Jonathan Abram. Look, I get it. It's the Chiefs and you can't stand the Chiefs. I absolutely get it. And they found a way to win even with their backup quarterback in. So, I mean, it just is what it is. The Browns are a really good team, but I don't think anyone today in Raider Nation all of a sudden is a Browns fan like they were on Sunday.
Yeah, it's and I don't know what, I mean, look, what do you do about calls like that, because the way the NFL rules are structured, it's not something that's reviewable, right? And so I and then by the time you make the call and NFL says, yeah, the crew is wrong, let's say they say that, because we've seen that happen 100 times, the game's over and it doesn't matter. So you can't change history, right? You can't go back and say, well, there should have been a play, there should have been a penalty on that, and they would have had the ball at the 1 yard line or whatever it would have been. And to me, though, that's the thing with the rules interpretation. I think the NFL really needs to be more transparent with how calls are made and why they're made. If you remember when the XFL came back and they were doing that judge in the sky type of thing, to me, I think the NFL missed a great opportunity. Maybe it was because of COVID and they were putting together a season under crazy circumstances. But I think that's what we need. I think if fans can hear from an official with the league and not Gene Steratore on TV, but actually somebody who's involved in making the call, say, hey, listen, here's what we saw. We did see helmet-to-helmet contact, but we determined based on our judgment that it was not intentional. Okay, fine. Great. So at least we could still disagree with you, but at least we know what your thinking was and your process was, and it's transparent. I think with the way the game is played today, the way that the game is consumed, we're watching, we're tweeting, we're watching on our phones, we're doing all this stuff from all these different angles. It would do the NFL good, I think, to be more transparent about it.
Absolutely, I agree. And I mean, the NFL does need to be more clear cut with their, you know, with their penalties and be consistent with them and everything. And, you know, if they're talking about player safety, then they need to err on the side of player safety, or they don't, you know, one side or the other. It's just like sometimes they go with player safety, sometimes they don't, you know, so it's just they're very inconsistent.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, we were talking about the coaching in the last segment and hiring black coaches. And I know that this league, I don't think people understand the hiring process too, especially for coaches who are still in the playoffs. But I know this league, this week, the league granted permission to conduct virtual interviews for teams that weren't usually allowed to communicate with coaches because of the playoffs. So guys like Eric Bieniemy, guys like Todd Bowles, and there's really just the two jobs left in Houston and in Philadelphia. So we'll see if that matters and if that changes things as we move forward. But Q, I know we got to let you go now. You got to go do your show in Texas. But we, as always, man, appreciate you being part of the show, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
Absolutely. I got to go do a live read for a used car dealership.
Oh, my God, dude. It's so funny because, you know, when you're not somebody who subscribes to that mindset, it's and look, like you said, I've never been the victim of that, right? Because I'm not black. But when you tell me a story like that, it makes my skin crawl. But at the same time, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. It's like something you'd see on Archie Bunker, right? Like from the 70s.
Exactly.
Like
exactly.
A sitcom. And you can't believe that there's actually human beings who live their life and think that way. So thank you for opening my eyes and reminding me that we still have a long way to go. I appreciate it.
Hey, man, I'll tell you one thing. If there's something I learned from 2020 is that this country has made a lot of, a lot of strides in the right direction. But I've also learned in 2020 that the country still has a long way to go.
It sure does, man. All right, Q, I appreciate you, man. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, brother. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Q Myers. I am Scott Gilbranson. We'll continue. Vinny Bonsignor coming up next here, as well as your calls at 702-365-9200. This is Silver and Black Today, only on Raider Nation Radio.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black Today. Here are your hosts, Scott Gilbranson and Q Myers.
Back to close out the show, Silver and Black Today, brought to you by our good friend Sam and Ash. Call them anytime, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. So do I, by the way. So every day, Q and I both, actually, we get geared up for the show with Dr. Jen's Ultimate Protein Bar. That's right, drjensnutrition.com. This is great stuff. Great snack, meal replacement, certified gluten-free, all natural ingredients, no artificial sweeteners, superfoods like spinach, kale, and quinoa. It tastes great. This does not taste like a piece of cardboard from that Amazon box delivered to your door. Instead, these are great fiber-full bars, high in protein, make you feel good. If you go to drjensnutrition.com and use the code SBT10, you will get a special discount just for our listeners, plus you get free shipping. So go check out Dr. Jen's Ultimate Protein Bars, drjensnutrition.com, proud members of Raider Nation as well. All right, we bring on Vinny Bonsignor now. And Vinny, hey, listen, I know you're coming up on your show. You're going to be talking about the lack of a combine this year, how that's going to change recruiting. Also at this hour, Tom Pelissero has reported that the NFLPA met with agents today and said that there's no, quote, rosy outlook on vaccinations for players by August, and to expect that there will be no OTAs in many camps again, that they will all be virtual. Boy, it looks like we might have a little bit of a repeat of 2020 in 2021.
Yeah, that is a possibility. I'm hoping it doesn't come to that. They were able to do a training camp and a full season. Obviously there were some glitches and some hiccups, but the NFL was able to get through the season and figure out a way for the most part to keep the workplace safe. And so, that is the NFL Players Association's, interpretation at the moment. I wouldn't say that that was gospel, to say the least. So we'll see. And hopefully it doesn't come to that. I think that it's vitally important, predicated on being able to do it in a safe manner, that teams are allowed to start getting their teams in, to the building for a normal off season. But we'll see where all that is headed.
Yeah, and maybe because they've already been through it 1 year, if they had to have more restrictions, maybe they can get those mini camps in as long as they have some kind of protocol like they did during this regular season and during the preseason as well. That would be great. Okay, so Vinny, playoffs coming up, and we got the Bills and the Chiefs, and of course the Packers and the Bucks. I'll tell you what, both these games are, I think, hopefully both live up to their bill, because they're both on the AFC side. You have two of the young, great quarterbacks in the league, and then of course, on the senior circuit in the NFC, you have Aaron Rodgers, probably going to be the MVP again, along with Tom Brady, the man who's thrown the most touchdown passes in the postseason. How do you see this one coming out, and who do you like in each one of these games?
I like the Packers, and I like the Chiefs, and hopefully that means getting that would mean a repeat of Super Bowl I, and wouldn't that be pretty cool to get the Chiefs against the Packers? Really quick, I got to go back to I was listening to you guys talking about the Daniel Sorensen.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And I got to say real quick, there is absolutely a way to keep your head up and lead with your shoulder in those situations. To me, what Daniel Sorensen did was clear targeting, intent and all that. I know he's not.
Because he lowered his head, Vinny? Because he lowered his head?
What's that?
Because he lowered
his
head?
No, he led with his head. You can't lead with the crown of your helmet. That is the key part of that rule. And there are ways. Look, if your eyes are looking at the ground, you're doing it wrong. You have to keep your head up. This way, that allows you to be able to now lead with your shoulder because you see where you are. We see it all the time where guys do it sound fundamentally, where they're able to kind of keep a track of where they are and then, you know, as needed, lead with their shoulder. To me, he led with the crown of his helmet. That's the whole point of the rule. And just to also add a little bit of clarification, even though it sometimes gets missed on the field, which these referees are in an impossible situation a lot of times because it's hard to see in real time what we end up seeing in slow motion. But that doesn't mean the NFL can't step in and does often to retroactively fine players for transgressions that maybe the referees didn't see or just in addition to the penalty that was called on the field. I don't think Daniel Sorensen should get suspended for the game whatsoever, but I do think some sort of a fine is needed because that was a penalty. And there's ways to, as a defensive back, if you're fundamentally sound and doing it right, to be able to tackle without leading with your helmet.
Well, Vinny, and I wonder, too, in cases like this, if there isn't an argument to be made because player safety is supposed to be paramount in the league, is if they can't take an action during the game, meaning that if the referees missed it, to your point, they're human beings. They're going to miss stuff, right? That maybe there would be some room for discussion around review of egregious plays like that.
Yes, and they do that in college, I think, in some some conferences. I don't know if there's a uniformed rule, but we saw that with the Clemson player. He got kicked out of the playoff game.
He does.
Another idiotic.
Hey Vinny, we'll continue the conversation tomorrow. Sorry to cut you off, buddy, because we're out of time. Vinny's coming up next in the huddle. Do not miss it. For Chris, Q, Scott, I am gone. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio.